Chapter 37. It was talking one night with a certain prince, one of the banished ministers of state belonging to the Tsar, that the discourse of my particular case began. He had been telling me abundance of fine things of the greatness, the magnificence, the dominions, and the absolute power of the Emperor of the Russians. I interrupted him, and told him I was a greater and more powerful prince than ever the Tsar was, though my dominion were not so large, or my people so many. The Russian grandee looked a little surprised, and, fixing his eyes steadily upon me, began to wonder what I meant. I said his wonder would cease when I had explained myself, and told him the story at large of my living in the island, and then how I managed both myself and the people that were under me, just as I have since minuted it down. They were exceedingly taken with the story, and especially the prince, who told me, with a sigh, that the true greatness of life was to be masters of ourselves, that he would not have exchanged such a state of life as mine to be Tsar of Muscovy, and that he found more felicity in the retirement he seemed to be banished to there, than ever he found in the highest authority he enjoyed in the court of his master the Tsar, that the height of human wisdom was to bring our tempers down to our circumstances, and to make a calm within, under the weight of the greatest storms without. When he came first hither, he said, he used to tear the hair from his head, and the clothes from his back, as others had done before him, but a little time and consideration had made him look into himself, as well as round him to things without, that he found the mind of man, if it was but once brought to reflect upon the state of universal life, and how little this world was concerned in its true felicity, was perfectly capable of making a felicity for itself, fully satisfying to itself, and suitable to its own best ends and desires, with but very little assistance from the world. That being now deprived of all the fancied felicity which he enjoyed in the full exercise of worldly pleasures, he said he was at leisure to look upon the dark side of them, where he found all manner of deformity, and was now convinced that virtue only makes a man truly wise, rich, and great, and preserves him in the way to a superior happiness in a future state. And in this, he said, they were more happy in their banishment than all their enemies were, who had the full possession of all the wealth and power they had left behind them. Nor, sir, says he, do I bring my mind to this politically, from the necessity of my circumstances, which some call miserable. But, if I know anything of myself, I would not now go back, though the Tsar my master should call me, and reinstate me in all my former grandeur. He spoke this with so much warmth in his temper, so much earnestness and motion of his spirits, that it was evident it was the true sense of his soul. There was no room to doubt his sincerity. I told him I once thought myself a kind of monarch in my old station, of which I had given him an account, but that I thought he was not only a monarch, but a great conqueror, for he had got a victory over his own exorbitant desires, and the absolute dominion over himself. He whose reason entirely governs his will, is certainly greater than he that conquers a city. I had been here 8 months, and a dark, dreadful winter I thought it, the cold so intense, that I could not so much as look abroad without being wrapped in furs, and a kind of mask of fur before my face, with only a hole for breath, and two for sight. The little daylight we had was for 3 months, not above 5 hours a day, and 6 at most, only that the snow lying on the ground continually, and the weather being clear, it was never quite dark. Our horses were kept, or rather starved, underground. And as for our servants, whom we hired here to look after ourselves and horses, we had, every now and then, their fingers and toes to thaw, and take care of, lest they should mortify and fall off. It is true, within doors we were warm, the houses being close, the walls thick, the windows small, and the glass all double. Our food was chiefly the flesh of deer, dried and cured in the season, bread good enough, but baked as biscuits, dried fish of several sorts, and some flesh of mutton, and of buffaloes, which is pretty good meat. All the stores of provisions for the winter are laid up in the summer, and well cured. Our drink was water, mixed with a quavity instead of brandy, and for a treat, meat instead of wine, which, however, they have very good. The hunters, who venture abroad all weathers, frequently brought us in fine venison, and sometimes bear's flesh, but we did not much care for the last. We had a good stock of tea, with which we treated our friends, and we lived cheerfully and well, all things considered. It was now March, the days grown considerably longer, and the weather at least tolerable, so the other travelers began to prepare sledges, to carry them over the snow, and to get things ready to be going. But my measures being fixed, as I have said, for Archangel, and not for Muscovy or the Baltic, I made no motion, knowing very well that the ships from the south do not set out for that part of the world till May or June, and that if I was there by the beginning of August, it would be as soon as any ships would be ready to sail. Therefore I made no haste to be gone, as others did. In a word, I saw a great many people, nay, all the travelers, go away before me. It seems every year they go from thence to Muscovy, for trade, to carry furs, and buy necessaries, which they bring back with them to furnish their shops. Also others went on the same errand to Archangel. In the month of May I began to make all ready to pack up. And, as I was doing this, it occurred to me that, seeing all these people were banished by the Tsar to Siberia, and yet, when they came there, were left at liberty, to go whither they would, why they did not then go away to any part of the world, wherever they thought fit. And I began to examine what should hinder them from making such an attempt. But my wonder was over when I entered upon that subject with the person I have mentioned, who answered me thus. Consider, first, sir, said he, the place where we are, and, secondly, the condition we are in, especially the generality of the people who are banished thither. We are surrounded with stronger things than bars or bolts. On the north side, an unnavigable ocean, where ship never sailed, and boat never swam. Every other way we have above 1,000 miles, to pass through the Tsar's own dominion, and by ways utterly impassable, except by the roads made by the government, and through the towns garrisoned by his troops. In short, we could neither pass undiscovered by the road, nor subsist any other way, so that it is in vain to attempt it. I was silenced at once, and found that they were in a prison every jot as secure as if they had been locked up in the castle at Moscow. However, it came into my thoughts that I might certainly be made an instrument to procure the escape of this excellent person, and that, whatever hazard I ran, I would certainly try if I could carry him off. Upon this, I took an occasion one evening to tell him my thoughts. I represented to him that it was very easy for me to carry him away, there being no guard over him in the country. And as I was not going to Moscow, but to Archangel, and that I went in the retinue of a caravan, by which I was not obliged to lie in the stationary towns in the desert, but could encamp every night where I would, we might easily pass uninterrupted to Archangel, where I would immediately secure him on board an English ship, and carry him safe along with me. And as to his subsistence and other particulars, it should be my care till he could better supply himself. He heard me very attentively, and looked earnestly on me all the while I spoke. Nay, I could see in his very face, that what I said put his spirits into an exceeding ferment. His color frequently changed, his eyes looked red, and his heart fluttered, till it might be even perceived in his countenance. Nor could he immediately answer me when I had done, and, as it were, hesitated what he would say to it. But after he had paused a little, he embraced me, and said, "How unhappy are we, unguarded creatures as we are, that even our greatest acts of friendship are made snares unto us, and we are made tempters of one another." He then heartily thanked me for my offers of service, but withstood resolutely the arguments I used to urge him to set himself free. He declared, in earnest terms, that he was fully bent on remaining where he was, rather than seek to return to his former miserable greatness, as he called it, where the seeds of pride, ambition, avarice, and luxury might revive, take root, and again overwhelm him. Let me remain, dear sir, he said, in conclusion, let me remain in this blessed confinement, banished from the crimes of life, rather than purchase a show of freedom at the expense of the liberty of my reason, and at the future happiness which I now have in my view, but should then, I fear, quickly lose sight of, for I am but flesh, a man, a mere man, and have passions and affections as likely to possess and overthrow me as any man. Oh, be not my friend and tempter both together. If I was surprised before, I was quite dumb now, and stood silent, looking at him, and, indeed, admiring what I saw. The struggle in his soul was so great that, though the weather was extremely cold, it put him into a most violent heat. So I said a word or two, that I would leave him to consider of it, and wait on him again, and then I withdrew to my own apartment. About 2 hours, after I heard somebody at or near the door of my room, and I was going to open the door, but he had opened it and come in. My dear friend, says he, you had almost overset me, but I am recovered. Do not take it ill, that I do not close with your offer. I assure you it is not for want of sense of the kindness of it in you, and I came to make the most sincere acknowledgement of it to you, but I hope I have got the victory over myself. My lord, said I hope you are fully satisfied, that you do not resist the call of heaven. Sir, said he, if it had been from heaven, the same power would have influenced me to have accepted it, but I hope, and am fully satisfied, that it is from heaven, that I decline it, and I have infinite satisfaction in the parting, that you shall leave me an honest man still, though not a free man. I had nothing to do but to acquiesce, and make professions to him of my having no end in it, but a sincere desire to serve him. He embraced me very passionately, and assured me he was sensible of that, and should always acknowledge it. And with that he offered me a very fine present of sables too much, indeed, for me to accept from a man in his circumstances, and I would have avoided them, but he would not be refused. The next morning I sent my servant to his lordship with a small present of tea, and 2 pieces of China damask, and 4 little wedges of Japan gold, which did not all weigh above 6 ounces or thereabouts, but were far short of the value of his sables, which, when I came to England, I found worth near £200. He accepted the tea, and 1 piece of the damask, and 1 of the pieces of gold, which had a fine stamp upon it, of the Japan coinage, which I found he took for the rarity of it, but would not take any more. And he sent word by my servant that he desired to speak with me. When I came to him, he told me I knew what had passed between us, and hoped I would not move him any more in that affair, but that, since I had made such a generous offer to him, he asked me, if I had kindness enough, to offer the same to another person, that he would name to me, in whom he had a great share of concern. In a word, he told me it was his only son, who, though I had not seen him, was in the same condition with himself, and above 200 miles from him, on the other side of the Obi, but that, if I consented, he would send for him. I made no hesitation, but told him I would do it. I made some ceremony in letting him understand that it was wholly on his account, and that, seeing I could not prevail on him, I would show my respect to him by my concern for his son. He sent the next day for his son, and in about 20 days he came back with a messenger, bringing 6 or 7 horses, loaded with very rich furs, which, in the whole, amounted to a very great value. His servants brought the horses into the town, but left the young lord at a distance till night, when he came incognito into our apartment, and his father presented him to me. And, in short, we concerted the manner of our traveling, and everything proper for the journey. I had bought a considerable quantity of sables, black fox skins, fine ermines, and such other furs as are very rich in that city, in exchange for some of the goods I had brought from China, in particular for the cloves and nutmegs, of which I sold the greatest part here, and the rest afterwards at Archangel, for a much better price than I could have got at London. And my partner, who was sensible of the profit, and whose business, more particularly than mine, was merchandise, was mightily pleased with our stay, on account of the traffic we made here. It was the beginning of June, when I left this remote place. We were now reduced to a very small caravan, having only 32 horses and camels in all, which passed for mine, though my new guest was proprietor of 11 of them. It was natural also, that I should take more servants with me than I had before, and the young lord passed for my steward. What great man I passed for myself I know not, neither did it concern me to inquire. We had here the worst and the largest desert to pass over, that we met with in our whole journey. I call it the worst, because the way was very deep in some places, and very uneven in others. The best we had to say for it was, that we thought we had no troops of Tartars or robbers to fear, as they never came on this side of the river Obi, or at least very seldom, but we found it otherwise. My young lord had a faithful Siberian servant, who was perfectly acquainted with the country, and led us by private roads, so that we avoided coming into the principal towns and cities upon the great road, such as Tumen, Saloy Kamiskoy, and several others, because the Muscovite garrisons which are kept there are very curious and strict in their observation upon travelers, and searching lest any of the banished persons of note should make their escape that way into Muscovy. But, by this means, as we were kept out of the cities, so our whole journey was a desert, and we were obliged to encamp, and lie in our tents, when we might have had very good accommodation in the cities on the way. This the young lord was so sensible of, that he would not allow us to lie abroad, when we came to several cities on the way, but lay abroad himself, with his servant, in the woods, and met us always at the appointed places. We had just entered Europe, having passed the river Kama, which in these parts is the boundary between Europe and Asia, and the first city on the European side was called Saloy Kamiskoy, that is, the great city on the river Kama. And here we thought to see some evident alteration in the people, but we were mistaken, for as we had a vast desert to pass, which is near 700 miles long in some places, but not above 200 miles over where we passed it, so, till we came past that horrible place, we found very little difference between that country and Mogul Tartary. The people are mostly pagans, their houses and towns full of idols, and their way of living wholly barbarous, except in the cities and villages near them, where they are Christians, as they call themselves, of the Greek Church, but have their religion mingled with so many relics of superstition, that it is scarce to be known in some places from mere sorcery and witchcraft. In passing this forest, after all our dangers were, to our imagination, escaped, I thought, indeed, we must have been plundered and robbed, and perhaps murdered, by a troop of thieves. Of what country they were I am yet at a loss to know, but they were all on horseback, carried bows and arrows, and were at first about 45 in number. They came so near to us, as to be within 2 musket shot, and, asking no questions, surrounded us with their horses, and looked very earnestly upon us twice. At length, they placed themselves just in our way, upon which we drew up in a little line, before our camels, being not above 16 men in all. Thus drawn up, we halted, and sent out the Siberian servant, who attended his lord, to see who they were. His master was the more willing to let him go, because he was not a little apprehensive, that they were a Siberian troop sent out after him. The man came up near them with a flag of truce, and called to them, but though he spoke several of their languages, or dialects of languages rather, he could not understand a word they said. However, after some signs to him, not to come near them at his peril, the fellow came back no wiser than he went. Only that by their dress, he said, he believed them to be some Tartars of Kalmyk, or of the Circassian hordes, and that there must be more of them upon the great desert, though he never heard that any of them were seen, so far north before. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.